Before we get started, I want to tell you about my experience with Own It Fitness. Own It Fitness is a place that helped me discover my fitness goals. They did a full evaluation of my physical condition, and they set out a plan for me to be able to meet my goals. And on top of that, they found a way to be able to work with my busy schedule. And they can do that for you as well. Own It Fitness is the perfect place for professionals to find the friends that they need to help them meet their physical goals. If you're looking for a place that can help you, if you're looking for a place that's friendly and a place that will help you confidently meet the physical goals that you have for yourself, then check out Own It Fitness. They're on the corner of Mowry and Blakow. This episode has been brought to you by Fremont Bank. Fremont Bank has been serving people and businesses in our community for over 60 years. For more information about the Fremont Bank, check out episode 104 on the Fremont Podcast. This episode has also been brought to you by Minutemen Press. If you are looking for design or printing needs, reach out to them. Let them know you heard about them on the Fremont Podcast. They'll give you 20% off on your first order. Banter Bookshop is your local go-to for all your reading resources. If they don't have it on the shelf, you can ask them and they can order it for you. Check them out on Capitol Avenue. Let them know that you heard about them on the Fremont Podcast. If you are looking to buy or sell a home, check out Petroselli Homes on Niles Boulevard.
Yeah, it's in our DNA. Both Morris and Alverta, they truly were advocates of sharing what they had. Fundamental to what we do is we share what we have.
That's right.
with the community.
Coming to you straight from Fremont, California, this is the Fremont Podcast, dedicated to telling the stories of the past and present of the people and places of the city of Fremont, one conversation at a time.
There are some guys redoing the snack shack of the Little League field here. And there's a banner that says who the remodel is sponsored by. And look, a local titular bank and their lovely foundation. What's going on at the shed?
So in the shed, we've redone the subfloor inside. We've painted, we've put can lights, new flooring in the restrooms. We replaced all the wood on the deck. We're putting new paint on the deck. After that's done, probably by next week, we'll start doing the handrail. Gonna put a whole new handrail around.
How long has it taken you to do all that stuff?
Rain slowed us down, but pretty much, you know, probably close to a month to do everything, you know, sporadically. You know, the rain's kind of held us up on the exterior part of it, but the interior part went pretty quick. Awesome. So,
what are you guys doing here?
We're laser grading the infield right now. So we're going to add 12 and a half tons of dirt, till it all up, and then we're going to laser grade it so that it's smooth, basically. Pretty straightforward.
I mean, we painted the whole entire thing. The roof stayed. That's why it's still the old Niles green. So the new board picked out new paint colors to try to make the snack shack pop, to try to get more people to come see it. But yeah, I mean,
it's a very bright blue.
Yes. Yes, it's a lot of work. We're glad to do the work, and you know, and put time and everything back into. My kids came through here and are both out of here and now playing high school sports, so it's nice to come back and do stuff for the next generation coming through.
You are listening to episode 104 of the Fremont Podcast.
Now, here's your host, Ricky B.
I am privileged to be joined by Mike Wallace of the Fremont Bank here in Fremont. When I first started the podcast, I thought it would be really cool to have a representative of the Fremont Bank on the podcast because we have similar names, the Fremont Podcast and Fremont Bank. So, Mike Wallace, good to have you on the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you are the current chairman of the board, and then you said you were CEO and president of the bank for a little while?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And how long were you CEO and president?
Approximately 5 years.
Okay. Okay. And how long have you worked for the bank?
50 years.
Wow. Wow, that's awesome. So we're sitting in a pretty cool room on Niles Boulevard, and this is part of the bank building that's been here for a while. How long has Fremont Bank been in this location here?
Oh, I think that I acquired this from Lloyds Bank somewhere in the 1980s.
Oh, okay.
When they were relocating to Paseo Padre someplace.
Okay.
And we operated it as a regular bank branch at that time.
Okay. Very cool. And now it's primarily offices?
Yeah. At the present time, because we're building our new headquarters building, many of our staff have relocated here. But once the building is completed, we will transfer back to the headquarters building and return this not to a branch, but to an entertainment facility, which is what we used it for from probably the last 25 years.
Wow. So a lot of people who've been around here for a good bit would remember this as being more of an entertainment facility then.
Yes.
That's cool. So I want to go back a little bit in your history. We'll talk more about the bank in a minute, but this is a pretty cool room that we're recording in, and you've got some cool memorabilia up, and I'm sitting on a couch with a Packers throw on it. I'm a Packers fan. Yeah. With a Steelers throw. I almost threw some insults your way there. Yeah. So if you're a Steelers fan, you must not be from around this area. Where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in a steel town 20 miles northwest of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, called Aliquippa, Pennsylvania.
Oh, very cool. And then what was the journey that brought you out to Fremont? How did you get out here?
Well, I once I graduated from high school, I went to college at Ohio State, which is about a four-hour drive from my hometown.
Not too far away.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. And you went to Ohio State, and then how'd you get here?
Well, during the Vietnam War, I decided that I was going to participate in ROTC, because I figured that if I was going to go into the military, I wanted to be an officer.
Right. Yeah.
And so that's what I did. I participated in ROTC. When I graduated in 1970, I was commissioned at the same time.
Wow. And so then you you served in the military for a little while? Then?
Yeah, for 2 years.
Okay,
yes.
For 2 years. Okay. And then how did you get out here? Did you get transferred out this way?
No. When I was in the military, I was assigned to Okinawa, Japan.
Okay.
And in Japan, after being there approximately a year, I got a new roommate in the officers' quarters whose name was Alan Hyman, whose father, Morris Hyman, was the founder of Fremont Bank.
Oh, okay. So you got connected through through a friend
through the
military.
In the military,
okay.
Yes. Yeah, and since I was there a year before he got there, I left and he was still there.
Okay.
And he made arrangements for me to meet his parents. He said he thought his parents would like me.
That's cool.
And so everybody in Southeast Asia, when they get out of the Army, they get out at the Oakland Army Base. I don't know if the Oakland Army Base is still there, but that's where it was then. And so I got out of the Army at the Oakland Army Base. Alan's mom, Alverta, picked me up in her convertible Mercedes and gave me the keys, and I drove it down to Fremont in about 10 minutes. Nobody on the freeway. And you know, after being bottled up in Okinawa for a couple of years, you know, where you can only drive 30, 35 miles an hour, you know, driving 120 was pretty good.
That's awesome. So you came out here, got to know, it was Alan's family?
Alan's family, Alverta, she and the Morris Hyman's assistant, Gloria Furness, They took me around, showed me all the sites, and I haven't even been back to places like Stinson Beach and Mount Tamalpais and places that they took me to. And Morris was out of town. But then he finally came back into town, and we met and chatted, and he wanted to know what I was going to do with my career, and I told him I was going to want to become a lawyer and go back to either Ohio State or University of Pittsburgh, one of the two. And so he said, well, you might want to think about that before you just jump into it. Why don't we go up and talk to his ex? Morris was a practiced law himself, particularly water law. But he wanted me to speak to his ex-law partner, who his name was Leo Kanowitz, who decided to quit practicing law himself and get in education. So he became a dean at the Hastings Law School in San Francisco.
Okay.
So Morris took me up to meet Leo, and we chatted, and Leo asked me why I wanted to become a lawyer. Did I want to right any wrongs or cure injustice? And I said, no, I just wanted to make money, and I wanted to get into corporate law. I didn't really want it anything to do with any of that. And he said, well, you're not going to be happy because, I left. I left the legal profession, and look at Morris. He's in banking. He's not in the legal profession anymore. There's so many lawyers I know that are miserable.
Wow.
And, what you want to make money, why don't you do it directly instead of indirectly and get in the banking business? So I didn't even know how to spell bank if you spotted me with a B-A-N. And so Morris said, listen, why don't you go back home and talk to your folks and see what course you want to take, and we'll give you your fare, air flight back to California and set you up as a management trainee at the bank if you decide that. So I went back and talked to my folks at the time. The town I grew up in was a big steel town in Ploitt. The steel mill there was 7 miles long along the Ohio River, employed 16,000 men.
Wow.
That my father had helped to unionize in the 30s.
Huh.
And because of his role, the company hated me, my father, hated anybody related to my father.
Oh, my goodness.
And so there wasn't really any future for me staying there.
Yeah.
Today, there's no steel mill there anymore. Of course, it lost all the jobs. All the steel industry is gone from that area, which in a way, environmentally, is really nice. When I grew up, it was so horrible.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
Three shifts a day, 8-hour shifts, 24 hours, 7/24, pumping soot all over the place. It just was I'm amazed that I lived this long growing up in that,
right?
I still go back. I have a home there. I go back 5-6 times a year.
Wow.
I enjoy the people are the greatest people on earth, and I just enjoy going back.
That's
there.
Great.
I'm going back there next week.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
hope awesome. To see some snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I've been hearing they've gotten some good a good amount of weather recently, so it'll probably be some.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah. I hope so.
We'll be right back. You can hear the rest of this conversation in just a minute. Ah.
That was actually a really good one. Try and do that one again.
We'll be right back. You can hear the rest of this conversation in just a moment.
One of the problems with shopping online, especially for books, is that the algorithm will give you what you want. I find it difficult to believe that people who enjoy reading only want to read and know about the 2 or 3 things that they already know that they like. When you go into a bookshop, especially a well-run, independent, local bookshop, you are going to encounter books, subjects, authors that you had no idea existed. Go to Banter Bookshop, look around on the shelves, find the things that you want, and all the things you didn't know you wanted.
If you need help navigating the local real estate market, contact Petroselli Homes on Niles Boulevard. With almost two decades of experience, this family-owned brokerage is an expert in the local real estate market. Give Jennifer Petroselli a call. With her wide-ranging knowledge of the real estate industry and expert negotiation skills, Jennifer goes above and beyond for her clients. Jennifer helps her clients make smart real estate decisions that benefit them in the long run. So if you're looking for a realtor who knows what they're doing and who genuinely cares about your needs and wants, reach out to Jennifer today and discover why Petroselli Homes is the right choice for all of your real estate needs.
And now, back to our conversation. So you went back and your parents told you you need to go back to California?
Yeah, you're not really going to have any future here. You got a big X on your forehead. Why don't you have nothing to lose. You're young, see what it's like. Growing up back there, as I said, environmentally, it was, horrible. If you wanted to look at the stars at night, you just had to look straight up because the horizon was red from the blast furnaces.
Wow. That's crazy.
It was pretty bad, pretty bad.
Wow.
So here it was pretty nice.
Yeah.
Also, when I was in Okinawa, meeting Alan, which was, like I said, a year after I got there, I met my wife the second day I was there.
In Okinawa,
in the officer's quarters. So my life was pretty much set in that island. And it's interesting because during World War II, my uncle fought in the Battle of Okinawa, and in his platoon, which has 40 men, only himself and another friend of his survived that battle. So I was there on the day when the United States gave Okinawa back to Japan, and my wife's father was on the stage because he was the interpreter, the main interpreter for the Japanese government. He worked for the U.S. Department of Defense, but he was the main interpreter guy. Here I am, sitting there watching the reversion of the island that my uncle took.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Wow. That's quite a connection. I mean, that's a storyline that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
So then you guys came here, and you started working in training, becoming a manager.
I was a management trainee, and Morris wanted me to go around and write procedural manuals of everything that was every department, what they were doing. And it was interesting because I would talk to the people who were doing the work, and they would tell me what they were doing. Then I would compare it with the managers who were responsible, and they had a completely different story about what they were doing. Mm. So over the course of time, I shared all of this with Morris, we really never published this procedural book, but it certainly helped me understand all the aspects of the bank, which I did that for maybe 9 months, a year. And then Morris wanted me to get a master's in business, so they arranged for me to go to Santa Clara to get a master's in business, which I thought was pretty cool because Santa Clara's colors are scarlet and gray, and Ohio State is scarlet and gray.
So you didn't have to change much of your wardrobe.
Change my wardrobe.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the history of the Fremont Bank, because obviously you came into it after it had already been started, but you got to know the Hyman family pretty well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, my wife and myself, we didn't know anybody in Fremont. They were the only folks that we knew. So we were there at their house almost every day. And, we had dinners there 3-4 times a week, and we were very close. And Morris and I would sit around and discuss the bank every evening. And it was a lot of fun. He was a wonderful mentor. Huh. And just a great person, a great businessman, and very fair with everybody.
That's awesome.
So, yeah.
How did the bank start? Like, what was it for him?
Morris was, as I said, he was an attorney. He was practicing water law. He didn't want to be involved with the day-to-day operations of the bank. he just wanted a local bank because where he, his history was back in the South. He was born in Shreveport, Louisiana, and met his wife, Alverta, in Natchez, because his dad and himself, they moved to Natchez. Her father was in the road construction business. And he got really hurt financially from the banks in Natchez.
Oh, interesting.
Pulled the rugs out from under him.
Huh.
And so Morris always wanted to really have a bank that was really supportive of local people and businesses. And so he wanted to have a bank just because of his history.
Yeah.
About how his father got messed up by the banks in Natchez, Mississippi. And I always told him, I always skidded with him. I said, you know, Morris, it's a great thing that you started a bank, and it's a really great thing that you started it in Fremont rather than in Natchez, Mississippi.
Right,
you
know? Right.
Because look what this area has grown
to. Oh, yeah.
Right?
And I've actually been to Natchez, Mississippi, so I know that area. I have some friends that live there.
Yeah.
So I know that area, and this is, I would definitely rather have a bank here than there.
Yeah. Yeah, from his law practice, he knew folks with money to invest. One of the principal fellas that was highly respected was Judge Quaresma, who's a Portuguese fella.
Okay.
And the Portuguese people, mostly farmers and that, they had money to invest. And they thought of Judge Quaresma not only as the judge in the here and now, but the judge in the hereafter. And if he and if he told them to invest, they would invest. So many, huh. You know, local farmers, Portuguese, Italians, you know, folks were the primary investors early
wow.
on with the bank.
That's interesting.
And Morris, he hired some bankers who were lifelong bankers, like with Bank of California or, you know, the different banks, and they huh. were retiring. And, you know, you would have expected them to make good decisions. And this was in 1964. But by 1969, the cumulative decision-making was very poor, and the bank was really needing another capitalization.
Okay.
And that at that time, Morris had come to know a fella who was from San Leandro, and through Democratic politics. So Morris was very big in Democratic
okay.
politics. And so he met this fella named Jack Brooks, who was a developer, and he had a company called Singer Housing, which later became Citation. And they were friends, and so he convinced him to invest in the bank to pretty much shore up its capital base. And I think the arrangement probably was Morris said, well, I will quit my practice of law and I'll go and, you know, work in the banking business. Now, at this time in 1973, when I got out of the military, I didn't know any of this history. I didn't know that Morris didn't become a banker because he wanted
oh,
to. He became a banker because he had to, you know. But at that time, there had to be 30, 40 financial institutions if you added up
huh.
banks and savings and loans in our Tri-City area
wow.
that we would have to compete against, and we're very small. We had three branches at
wow.
that time.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say, Fremont, if you guys started in the early 60s, Fremont had only been a city for an official city, I guess, for about 10 years at that point.
I think
in time.
About seven.
Seven
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, Fremont Bank, I mean, they continued on, they persisted, right? You came in
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
And you said there needed some more capitalization. What were some of the milestones along the way that the Fremont Bank had to go through?
Well, you know, we were fortunate enough to be in this community because as the community grew, our customer base grew, and we had plenty of lending opportunities. And the main thing was we didn't have a big kind of dividend policy for the stockholders.
Okay.
So all the earnings that we had didn't go back out to shareholders. They just funded more and more growth.
Okay.
And so, and that was a key thing because the regulators require a certain amount of earnings capital a ratio to support the amount of growth that you have.
Okay.
And had those been distributed, we wouldn't have been able to continue to grow like we were growing with the community's growth.
Yeah.
And so that was very important. And the community, as I said, there were 40 different financial institutions.
Right.
And at that time, the banks that focused on folks with high, first of all, there were not a lot of folks with high net worth.
Okay.
You know, and there weren't a lot of big businesses. It's basically a bedroom community.
Yeah.
And so those folks that were desirable from a banking perspective, like professionals, like accountants, doctors, lawyers, you know, architects, there were all these banks that were going after a relatively small number of them. So you couldn't really make any money.
That's right.
At first, there wasn't that many of them anyway.
Yeah.
So we were basically at that time a consumer type lender, a lot of car loans and car leases. And at that time, home loans were pretty much the purview of savings and loan institutions. Hmm. And banks didn't do any, much of that.
Okay.
Morris wanted our bank to do home loans.
Okay.
And so he met some folks that had a history of making loans. You don't, if you want to survive as a bank, you don't make fixed rate, 30-year fixed rate loans and keep them on your books because rates will go up and then you're underwater with them. So you have to know how to make the loans and sell them to different governmental entities like Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And then you sell them. If you sell them at 7%, the Fannie Mae gets 6.75%. You keep a quarter to service that.
Oh, loan. Interesting. Okay.
So he wanted to build a servicing portfolio. So my ex-roommate, my buddy Alan, he gets out of the service after a year. He was kind of like figuring out what he wanted to do, and then he spent some time teaching accounting at Ohlone and then he came on board.
Okay.
And these experienced, there was two experienced mortgage guys, they pretty much trained Alan, and then Alan became responsible for growing the mortgage banking operation of the bank. So the bank has, unlike many community banks, it has two very distinct and important divisions. One is a commercial banking division, which is just like any commercial bank anywhere, and the other is a mortgage bank
that
makes mortgages, loans, and with the goal of selling most of those to Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, other. So even though the bank has grown to like $5.5 billion in assets, at one point we were servicing over $9 billion in loans that we had made and continue to service and have the relationship with those customers. So
are the majority of those customers in the real estate in part of that part of the bank? Are they in Fremont or this general area then, or is it broader than that?
Well, at first it was just that. It was just in the, well, then we expanded into the, up the 680 corridor and, and up all the way up to Walnut Creek and and into San Jose and so we're in Oakland and San Francisco and Mountain View. But what we found was there was opportunity to do business statewide with through a network of wholesale mortgage brokers where we could acquire the loans and sell them to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yeah.
So beginning maybe six years ago, we started doing a lot of business statewide in addition to the Bay Area. Along the coastal areas of Southern California.
Okay. Wow. So you've got the two different divisions. You've got the real estate side. You've got the, just your commercial bank side. How many branches do you have?
I always forget. I think it's around 21. We really don't need that many as we did at one time.
Yeah.
Because habits of people have changed so much to, you know, to do electronic banking. And so the bank branches now are pretty much kind of like migrating toward being a service facility that basically are there to assist people in how to use the technology,
sure,
you know,
sure, yeah.
and open accounts and do different. Still, I think it's important for some of the lending transactions to have a branch. And we do a lot of business and wealth management, investment advice and trust business, which initially took many years to become profitable because there just wasn't a lot of wealth in this area. But over the last 15 years, there's been a huge increase in the wealth and demand for trust services and investment services is increasing exponentially.
How have you found the adjustment to be, or what are some of the challenges that you've had to work through to both adjust to the changes that have happened in our community, as well as you reference the fact that, you know, a lot of banking is being done online now, and people just don't have the habit of going into brick and mortar banks. Like, how are you guys finding that adjustment for your purposes?
Well, I mean, you just embrace it. I think it's fun. And in terms of the community makeup, our community, well, in the Tri-City area here, is one of the most ethnically diverse in the United States. In fact, I was telling a friend of mine that was visiting me from my hometown in Pennsylvania, let's walk around Lake Elizabeth and let's do a test here. And I'll bet you that 9 out of 10 of the people that we walk past, or they're walking toward us, you know, are speaking a different language and don't look like us at all, right?
Yeah.
And it was, we were counting, and it had to be like 96% of that. So
yeah.
So we've embraced the different cultures,
the
and ethnic groups.
Yeah.
One of the fun things that Alan and I did, that this was right around the time of 2000, you know, the big worry about the computers blowing up and all that. You know, we went to India.
That's right. Y2K.
Yeah, Y2K. We went to India because we could see that the Indian population in Fremont was growing, and we had many really good, loyal Indo-American customers. So we thought it'd be really cool to go there. So we went there with one of our customers.
Oh, wow.
And traveled all around through Delhi, down to Goa, to Mumbai, and Udaipur. Jaipur was a sister city of Fremont at the time. And really, I think it was very important. And there was a newspaper, still might be around, called the India Post, that had, you know, publicized our journey. And it was really kind of cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Actually, we were talking about the listener base of the Fremont podcast a while ago, and the majority of our listeners come from this Tri-City area. But when you look at it, the nations that are listening to the podcast, a lot, we have actually a good strong percentage of people listening in India. So I say strong percentage, I mean, I'm talking like 1 or 2 percent, but I think they're the second most, it's the country that's listening to the second most out of the, you know, next to the United States. So, so I don't know if that's just connection to people who live here and go back, or they have relatives that are connected to people that live here that are listening, or I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I would sit around and, you know, have a beer with some of our customers, and And we would get to talking, and I would be telling them, you know, that I was going back to Pennsylvania to visit my friends. And I, like I said, I go back there maybe 5 or 6 times a year. But they would say, well, I'm going back to India, you know. In fact, a real good buddy of mine, Dr. Ash Jain, he goes there regularly. His mom is still there.
And, that's cool.
And another fellow that I know quite well, Dr. Jacob Eepin, who's on the Washington Hospital Board with myself, he was, in New Year's, he was sending me pictures from Kerala in southern India, and I was in Madeira and in Portugal to watch the fireworks.
That's cool.
And he was with Michael Douglas and Catherine Zeta-Jones, so he was one-upping me about
that's hilarious.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I was with Cristiano Ronaldo, so I think I up him.
There you go. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's really funny. Well, you mentioned that you're on the board at Washington Hospital. You've been on the board there for a little while?
Yeah, since 1990.
Okay, wow. Yeah. And then are you involved in any other organizations like that in the city of Fremont or in this area?
Not anymore. I mean, I have been, like, was one time on the board of the Fremont Philharmonic.
Oh, okay,
and
yeah.
So we still support the, now it's grown to be the I think the East Bay, or the
yeah,
Bay.
Yeah, it's called the Bay Philharmonic. Yeah, we had them on the, we had the one of the producers and then the conductor on the podcast a little while ago.
Yeah, and I was the chair of the Commercial Industrial Development Commission, which was a organization to try to encourage more commercial industrial relocation to to Fremont, particularly the industrial areas of Fremont. I did that for a while, but
hello, Fremont. We like making this podcast. We're glad it exists. Like, that's it. We like that it is a thing that exists. We think it is a good thing that is routinely added into the community, week by week. Based on the listeners, the numbers that we can see behind all our fancy online charts and graphs and such, it looks like you all think the podcast is a good thing. It seems like you also want it around, and that you want it to exist. If you like the podcast and would like it to exist in the community, please consider supporting the podcast financially. Please consider becoming a supporting member, signing up for the reoccurring support option on the website listed in the show notes of this episode. I'll also tell you the website in a second. If you are able to support us making this show, please do. We would like to keep making it. You can support us on a reoccurring basis at buymeacoffee.com/the Fremont podcast. Thank you.
Now, aside from the bank and the hospital, now I do spend time. We have a foundation named after Morris Hyman, the Morris Memorial Foundation,
okay.
And we have different events to raise money, and we give money to two things which I think were dear to Morris's heart, was helping poor children, which was me.
Yeah.
poor children.
Yeah.
And poor elderly adults who. Huh. And so we raise money through golf tournaments and through, we have a big Christmas kickoff lunch at Massimo's with about 100 guys that go to that.
That's awesome.
We raise money in both of those things, and we give it to those kinds of charities that do that kind of work.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. For those of us who didn't know Morris, what are some of the things that, how do you remember him, and how do you think he ought to be remembered in the community?
Well, he cared deeply about people, and because of that history that I told you about, how he was wronged by his dad was wronged by the bank. So there used to always be a saying, listen, if Morris is gonna offer you something, it's that offer is and then you turn it down, the next offer is not going to be as good.
That's right.
Because he was all, it was very fair to everyone, and cared about the employees of the bank. We have a employee stock ownership plan that we established in 1975.
Wow.
Kind of copied off of the one that Safeway had back in the 70s. And he had a friend that was with a major law firm in San Francisco that helped us establish it. So over the course of the years, the ESOP, the Employee Stock Ownership Plan, now owns nearly 20% of the bank.
Wow.
And so the employees, they have every reason to think like an owner when they're dealing with customers, because they are.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wow. That's cool. Yeah. When you think about the involvement, I was going to say when I have visited events or just different fundraisers that have taken place around the city, I always hear the Fremont Bank name being mentioned as a sponsor and involved. So it seems like. I mean, you have, that employee ownership part of it, but I feel like you guys really just make a lot of effort to be involved in the things that are going on around the city.
Yeah, it's in our DNA. Both Morris and Alverda. Alverda was from Louisiana, too. They were both, from that great state. And they truly were advocates of sharing what they had. So whenever we do things, fundamental to what we do is we share what we have.
That's right.
With the community.
Yeah. That's right. That's cool. So you guys are going to have the biggest building in Fremont pretty soon. Well, I think. Yeah. I mean, it's going up. I mean, so tell me a little bit about that. What was the vision behind that building, and what's the plan? And the hope for that space.
I told you I was in India, right?
And right.
I went to see the Taj Mahal.
Oh, okay.
And it's marvelous. I mean, it is. It's just a beautiful, beautiful sight to see and a thrilling experience. But the tour guide was with us. Basically said, it took 20 years, at least 20 years, to build this. And I go, how could something take 20 years? To be built, that's beyond my understanding. And so you asked me about the headquarters. We started on our project in 2014.
Wow.
So we're about halfway away to what it took to build the Taj Mahal.
That's great.
It's just, of course, COVID didn't help at all. But back around a little bit before 2014, the city of Fremont approached me, and they had a vision for their downtown, which was extending Capitol Avenue from where it is up toward the hospital all the way to the hub. Now, this was very interesting because when I came to Fremont, Morris was upset that Morris and a doctor friend of his named Ralph Alpern actually controlled a lot of the property between where the shopping center is, where the hospital is, was the Capwell's building, and the hub. And what he wanted to do was make Capitol Avenue the main business drag, all the way putting major national tenants on each end, the hub and at the Capwells.
And that was his vision back when?
Back in the 70s, early 70s when I came to Fremont.
Wow, okay.
And the city of Fremont just didn't go along with that for one reason or another. And it upset him. That was one of the things that upset him the most about the vision of the city of Fremont. And what really threw him for a loop was when they built the Citibank building right on what Capitol Avenue would have been extended to. So it was blocking anything for that ever happening.
Wow.
So around 2013, some of the city people came to talk to me about we think that we would like to condemn the Citibank building and knock it down and extend capital all the way.
Huh.
Because this is our vision. They shared the vision of the high density townhouses, condominiums, then apartments, more of an urban feel to it, not so much cars but bikes and walking, and then a strip of retail going up and down Capitol. And I said, well, yeah, that's good. I mean, I think our at that time our building was nearing nearly 50 years, quite 50 years old yet, but it was not efficient. It was it was tired. It needed a lot of work.
When you say our building, which building are
you?
The
bank building.
Which one was that? This one or the?
No. The headquarters.
Okay, the headquarters.
The headquarters across from the hub.
Okay, gotcha.
And so the city folks said, look, we need a street in back of your bank, which is where the Nations was. We need a street.
Yep.
And we don't have any use for the property where the Citibank property is. So why don't we swap properties, give us the land so that we can build our streets in back of your building. We'll give you the property along Capitol. And it was much more property along Capitol than we were giving up, we weren't ever going to use anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we made that trade, and I got to thinking about how we were going to fit in with this new development, which we had a tired old building. So I started thinking about, all right, wouldn't it be a good thing to modernize and build a new building? And then started thinking about, well, should we? We had about 2 acres, and I thought, well, we don't really need 2 acres.
Yeah.
So it came to that we ended up selling the vast majority of that property to a developer of apartments.
Okay.
Retaining the corner to build our headquarters building.
Okay.
And like I said, given one problem after another, it's taken a long time, and COVID didn't help with any of this. And then the supply chain, and anybody that's been in the construction business knows how difficult
prices on materials have gone up and down all over the place.
It's all over the place. And so finally, I think we're getting close to the end, and hopefully in March sometime this year, on our 60th anniversary, we'll have a brand new building, and it's iconic. It's really cool.
Yeah.
We'll have the boardroom on the top of the building, which we call it the boardroom. We only have one board meeting a month, so it's basically going to be used. The top of the building is going to be used for entertaining
facilities. That's great.
We have, in the wall, TVs and kitchen, and it's going to be just a big entertainment facility.
That's awesome. Is it going to be something that's that people will be able to rent out, or is it primarily you're going to be doing for your entertainment?
Can't rent. No, we won't rent it out. Yeah. We never rented out our facility here.
Okay,
it's just things that we use to entertain our customers and our prospective customers.
Every time I drive by it, I'm thinking, man, that. There's a new change. I think they got the sign up there a little while ago, and so you can see that sign up front, and it's a beautiful building.
Yeah, what's really cool is those fins that we have on the building. We've made it so that, let's say the Niners win, that building will be all red and gold.
Oh, that's cool.
Anytime anything, if the Warriors ever win again, it'll be blue and gold.
That's really, really cool.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think it's going to be a great space. I think it certainly sets off the entrance to Capitol Avenue in a great way, and especially being on the corner of Fremont and Capitol, I think it's going to be a really cool space. I was a little skeptical when I started seeing everything going up along Capitol there. I love the districts. I love downtown Niles. I lived in the Irvington area for a while. I love that corner on Washington and Fremont, and I felt like these and Centerville, you know, and Mission San Jose. I love all these little smaller communities.
Yeah.
And so when they started building stuff there and on Capitol, I was a little skeptical as it being a place that would take off and really kind of capture the attention of the city of Fremont. Uh-huh. I'm interested to see how things develop over the next few years. And
you know, it's kind of like the beauty of living in California in the Bay Area, why it's such a great place to live. It, you have options, and there's no way you will ever, replicate the charm of Niles.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean, it's just cool. It's just but it's very different from the more modern part of Centerville, which is where the thing is where the new building is going to be, and
that's right,
and completely different from Warm Springs Mission San Jose is, you know, they have their own, you know, great things about them, and you could experience all of those different things all the time. You know?
Let me ask you this: for people who are new to Fremont or new to the Bay Area, and they're looking for a bank to work with, what are some of the things that you feel set Fremont? I mean, we've talked about a lot of it. The history, I think, speaks for itself, and you shared a lot of that already. But what are some of the things that sets you apart from some of the other banks in the area that might interest them in becoming a client or a customer at the Fremont Bank?
I think local decision making, access. I mean, we have the technology tools that the big banks have, but the big banks have no local decision-making authority whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so when you deal with our bank, we have people that you could talk to.
That's
to get
great.
Stuff done.
Yeah.
Time is very important to everybody. Yeah. The older I get, the time is more precious than ever, you know.
Yeah.
And so just, you know, the be able to fix stuff. It's no surprise that in the banking business, there's going to be a problem. There's going to be a mistake. There's going to be an upset.
Yeah.
And the ability to fix that timely is really important.
That's
so
right.
We know that things are going to go haywire.
Yeah.
And you know, our job is to fix them right away when it happens.
Is there anything else coming up in the future for the bank? I know the building is the big thing, the Taj Mahal, right? Is there anything else coming up that you guys are looking forward to?
Really just continuing to grow the various businesses that we're in. Looking forward to having the different departments come into the new headquarters building. We're gonna have the trust and investment services there, and as I said, that's becoming more and more important to the bank. And I think that we're gonna have the mortgage banking folks there also. And I think that given what I'm looking at in the economy, and there are folks that have loan rates less than 3%, but there are also more and more that have home equity lines of credit that are like 9.5%. That even though they're married with a low rate first, their overall rate is quite high. So I think rates are going to start trending down, and there'll be more refinance activity going on. So I think this year we're going to be pretty much firing on many cylinders. The commercial banking side of the business is taking advantage of the fact that Silicon Valley Bank disappeared, First Republic blew up.
Right.
We are acquiring a lot of new First Republic customers because they don't like the service that they're getting. That commercial part of our bank is very similar to what First Republic did with private banking type of activities, which is what we do on that aspect of the bank. And so we've been very successful in acquiring First Republic customers. We've been very successful in acquiring Bank of the West customers, who Bank of the West got acquired by Bank of Montreal.
Okay.
And, you know, those folks are used to a level of service that they're not seeing.
Right.
And so,
right.
So we're fortunate to be here and be able to continue to acquire the, you know, those types of customers. And that's great.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Wow. Well, very good. I think that if people wanted to know more about the bank, they could probably just drive down and find a branch locally.
Yeah.
But if they wanted to find out more, there, you guys have your website, FremontBank.com.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And we'll put that in the show notes. What are your plans? Do you have, you were the CEO, president, you're on the board now. Do you have any other plans for you in the near future here?
Well, I tell everybody I don't want to be part of my wife's org chart, so I'm going to just hang out over here. Seriously, I don't know how to fix anything. I mean, now that I know that you have some electrical experience
on
me, and I'll be able to call you to fix something that goes haywire.
That's right.
No, I love what I do. I love the people that, you know, the customers. I don't do that much day to day. I get involved with large loans or you know, sometimes dealing with regulators. From technology, I'm a caveman when it comes to technology. I have so many people that help me with technology. It's embarrassing. But I think it's just really focusing on big picture things and working with the senior management and looking at ways to grow and continue to focus on the employee ownership and retention of you know, great employees, recruiting new people, new customers, new staff.
It's
a big
thing. Great.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this episode, and thanks for the conversation. I look forward to seeing more of what Fremont Bank does, and hopefully get to see you around a little bit more in the community. Maybe we'll cross paths again.
Okay. Thank you, Ricky.
This episode was hosted and produced by Ricky B. I'm Gary Williams. Andrew Kvet is the editor. Scheduling and pre-interviews by Sarah S. Your reviews help other people find this podcast. If you would, please leave a review on iTunes. Be sure to subscribe wherever it is that you listen so you don't miss an episode. You can find everything we make, the podcast, and all of our social media links at thefremontpodcast.com. Join us next week on The Fremont Podcast.
This is a Muggins Media Podcast.
Thank you for listening to The Fremont Podcast. If you are an individual or a business that would like to be a sponsor partner on the podcast, please reach out at thefremontpodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to our website, thefremontpodcast.com, and you can reach out to us through our contact form. Thank you for listening, thank you for sharing, and thank you for your support.